1990, and it is an interview with Margaret Darling. And we'll check back in a minute with those who are participating.
In the news, they say, Bob, my name is Bob Brown, and I'm here to have a little chat with Margaret Darling. You're on, Bob.
I'm Bob Brown, a neighbor of Margaret Darling's, and I'm glad to be here to take part in this interview. I know that she'll have a wealth of knowledge of what went on as far back as 1907.
Is that right, Margaret?
That's correct.
Well, I'm Ken Wood, and I'm just an enthusiast of history and have been a longtime friend and of Margaret Darling's. I've known her for years and years, and just come here as a enthusiastic participant.
I'm Joe Saint, a friend of Margaret Darling too. And I talked to her a few times at home. We've had a few discussions about different things.
Historical.
Ruth? And I'm Ruth Melbourne, and I'm a niece.
And George Jackson, I'm going to try and be the activator, shall we say, and keep things rolling. Okay.
Ed was here. I saw a car out there that looked like his.
Well, I was taking a lot of parking space out there, June, but I just had that painted.
I noticed that. You took two.
Not too anxious to get anybody to dig it.
Margaret, we usually start these interviews by asking who your mother, about mother and dad. And where did, where were they born, your mother and your father?
Your mother and father, where were they born, Margaret?
Oh, they were, my father was born at Seaford. And his family went north to out of Huntsville, and my mother was born at Utterson, in between Bracebridge and Huntsville. And I was born back in where father had a sawmill at Ashton, at the nearest. Place would be Huntsville, where he did his business. And then when the timber gave out, mother always wanted to have a farm. Father came down and looked around, and Sam Ferris wanted to sell, and he bought, and we moved down on a muddy, muddy day in March.
Margaret, your father came down first and worked down here for a year, didn't he?
They came down, you see, it was all timber country up there. And in the summertime, once the sawmill closed, they were finished, there was nothing. And they heard of help wanted down here. And I think there were two summers that they came, and that was the reason he bought where we are. The Ogilvy family had gone into the North Country at the same time, but they decided after the first winter that wasn't for them, and they came to Bond Head, and that was, they still kept their connections, the Ogilvies and the Darling family.
Is that the Ogilvy family that run the livery in Bradford?
Yeah, Dave Ogilvy was the son.
Oh, yes.
Uh-huh.
What about the Taylor? There was a Taylor by the name of Ogilvy, wasn't there?
Pardon?
There was a Taylor?
Yeah, George.
George Ogilvy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was a very fine man.
What did your dad pay for this farm when he bought it in 1907?
You're going to laugh because he couldn't get a building lot. $8,500, and he didn't get any money for himself for about 8 years. I don't know how we ever survived. But in those days, you made your own bread, your own butter, and you had your meat. And that was it.
Yeah.
But how he managed with a growing family, and then four girls. There were no boys until Graham came along.
No cars either.
Oh, well, we had the old Model T car, and we never had as much pleasure out of any vehicle as we did out of that old Ford car. And the times we had, you know, going up to the relatives out of Arilla, and you'd get into the sand, and...
That's after you moved down here.
Oh, yeah.
Why don't you tell us about how you boxed up everything and put it on the railroad car and brought it all down here?
Oh, yeah. Well, when they moved, Uncle Will was out west. He came east and helped Father move us down and got the big box car. And even there was a cow in there as well as household effects.
No horses?
Oh, yes, there's a team of horses there. They came along, too.
And the implements?
And there were a few implements, not that many. But even so, it was a struggle. But then you had good neighbors.
And the family. They all got on the train.
Yeah.
and landed in Bradford.
Yeah. And Dave Ogilvy met us at the station, and he brought us up... town to his sister, Mrs. Wardman, at the double house there by the town hall. And we had our supper there, our meal, and then he had the Democrat, and we loaded up, and out we came. And
put the team to the wagon and come out here.
And the mud. Oh. And there wasn't a stick of wood on the place. And luckily, Father had brought what hardwood was left along with him. And but we managed to survive. And I think, the neighborhood was different. We all made our own parties and our good times. And it's funny that Bob's here in Cannes, and I watched both of their parents' weddings, you know. Kids at that age, well, they have to, this is something. Does any of this make sense?
Yeah, it
does.
Is that what you want?
Yep.
Margaret, your family, no, your oldest sister was, your oldest sister was Beth?
No, Jenny.
Jenny.
We were all named
Jenny.
After aunts.
And Jenny, and she moved to Brampton.
Yeah.
Yeah, and now she's passed away.
Yeah.
And then Beth?
Beth went down teaching a high school at Ottawa and married a dairy farmer.
Yeah, and then Ellen?
Ellen was the one that stayed home. She decided after... first year in high school that mother needed some help at home, mm-hmm. and she stayed at home.
Yeah. Ellen then married Bill Melbourne.
And then
died.
They had four children, mm-hmm. but she died.
Then the sweetest of them all was Margaret.
Pardon?
The sweetest of them all were you.
Oh!
Then they changed the pattern and had two boys.
Yeah.
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 Graham, who stayed at home on the farm.
Yeah.
And Jim, who was a teacher around here and then went to Toronto.
Yeah. But his widow was
Mary.
Still alive.
His widow, Mary, lives in Toronto, comes up to visit Margaret periodically.
If you know where Scarborough General Hospital is, well, Bob Archer from our neighborhood, he lived three blocks to the north, and Mary, my sister-in-law, three blocks to the south. But Jim talked school out in that neighborhood, so did Mary. That's how they met. And,
okay, now, you've told us about what the other members of the family did. What did you do?
What did I do?
Yeah,
Margaret's a nurse.
Well,
York,
all the ones are here. If you didn't make it, you had three options. If you were clever, you could get through and teach. The next option, you could go in training in the hospital as a nurse, and then the third was you could work in an office doing bookkeeping and that type of work. Those are the only three things you could choose at that time.
What made you decide to become a nurse?
It was 1924. There were quite a few from this neighborhood. Bob's aunt, you had two aunts from the Western.
Mm-hmm.
Mrs. Dr. Fraser.
Yeah.
The Fraser family, and then, but there's so many from this neighborhood went, and then Mrs. Duff from Cookstown, her husband was killed overseas in the First War. She graduated from there and stayed on. Going down the line, they all seemed to go to the Western rather than General at that time, or St. Michael's. Those are your only, or to Barry. You could go there. But
you went to New York, didn't you, Margie?
Yeah, some of us,
Now, you went to New York. You're holding out on it.
Pardon me?
You went to New York, didn't you?
Yes, a classmate from Unionville. You know, faraway fields look green.
Yeah.
And we couldn't believe it when we went to Albany. Well, this thing appeared in an ad in the hospital for help at Albany. And they'd gone out on strike, and we thought, well, if they'd gone on strike, that's not the place for us. But then the superintendent from there was one of their own graduates, an older person, and she came from Hamilton. And she had other connections, and they were telling us, you know, no, it isn't that way at all. And we went down, and they certainly made us welcome. And we stayed on supervising. I was on male surgery, and my classmate was up above on women's surgery. And we enjoyed it. There were so many Canadians, and they made Canadians. It wasn't on account of the strike that they made us so welcome, but they found out that we were doing a better job in our profession than that their own were. And anyone from Canada, Montreal, some came from Montreal, but it was mostly Toronto.
How many years would your training have been then, Margaret?
Well, $5 for the 10-hour shift. And then, of course, as soon as that patient could breathe comfortably, you were off, which was about 5 days. And now, you see, intensive care has been a big thing in the hospital, I think, because I've seen a lot of, not a lot, but a few of them, you know, they should have been retired, and they'd be on with an ill patient, and shouldn't have been.
Margaret, how long did it take to be a nurse? 3 years?
Yeah.
3 years.
I don't think we'd have made it only Mr. George Weston's bakery was next door, and there were always goodies coming, and Mr. Weston never did he come. We'd be sitting out in the summer, and his chauffeur would come and take him up home on Manning Avenue. But he never would pull out and leave an empty seat in that car. And then the chauffeur would take us around town. Well, where do you want to go? Well, it didn't matter anywhere as long as it was a car ride. And then there was a delicatessen where you could go in and order anything you wanted. And Mr. Weston paid the bill. So I always buy Weston bread. And I use a lot of it, too. But the Westons really were fine people. They were Americans. Most people didn't know that, that came over. And then they stayed, and they had four of a family. And the ones that should have been more interested in the, well, the two older ones were the girl and the boy. The younger one, well, he'd had life too easy, and he'd get up about 9 o'clock in the morning. At least that's what he, I shouldn't be saying that when I was there in the house. But he'd stay out till all hours of the night and then and sleep away. But George Weston survived.
Can we go back a little bit? How old were you when you came, when you moved to the farm?
I was about a little over seven.
But you went to all your school, all the time you went to school was in Bradford?
Pardon me?
All the time that you went to school was in the Bradford area?
No, we had our own school out at number four.
Out at number four.
And we were very fortunate because it was all local girls and they were all A1 teachers. And I guess the reason was that they paid a better salary. And but my sister first found out $480 for the year.
Did the bus pick you up at the gate, Margaret?
Oh, no. We were far healthier than the ones today. We had to walk, and we had to walk to high school, too. And we thought nothing of it because the horses were needed at home to work, and everybody walked and thought nothing of it at all. And one man, McKay, walked from away over by the river into high school, and he eventually ended up at the doctor, the medical man. And all that long walk that he had. But he cut across country, and
when did your dad buy the other, Dad and Graham buy the other farm?
I can't just definitely pinpoint it. The grandmother McClellan, you see, it was their farm, and she lived there, and then when she died, there were renters and whatnot, I guess it belonged to the McClellan estate.
This is the 100 acres. When you go around the corner down on the fourth line.
Where George Stoddard was.
Where George Stoddard used to be.
Okay, just to clarify, this is on the fourth line.
Yeah.
On the south side, we actually in concession three then.
But when we moved.
It's the farm
right on the corner.
Over the banks.
Yep,
over the banks.
Yep.
I see.
When we moved into the neighborhood, if it was all Ferris, or if your name wasn't Ferris, well, it had been. And McDonald was one, the McDonald sisters, and who was the other, the third one? That are still.
Nisha's?
Sullivan's?
No. Jonathan and Nisha's, but then you see it's other people living on their place now.
The Sutherlands would be down there too,
you know,
in the Sutherland place.
They were there at that time. But I think we had, we enjoyed life more than the ones today are, because they were all homemade parties, and I remember coming in from one, and the sun was coming up. But that was all right because it was a presentation after a wedding and you knew the home and who all would be there. So, but it was a tough going day. You had to do your work just the same.
Tell us about the time that Graham was hauling home wood crossing the canal and he went into the canal and lost the tax money.
Yeah. And that was hard to come by in those days, and the tax money gone.
Yeah, it was in his pocket, he lost it, went down at the bottom of the canal.
Well, the draining of the marsh really was the biggest thing, but Mr. Fraser, down the lane. He was always preaching this, you know, drain the marsh.
That's on the Doan farm.
Pardon me?
That's Mr. Fraser on the Doan farm?
Yeah, W.S. Fraser. And then Peter Ferris, next, he was for it too. And, so many of the people just couldn't vision that far. And of course, they didn't have the machinery to do the work. But Mr. Fraser always said, drain the marsh and all the food we'll get. But then none of his family stayed on the farm. They were lawyers and one dentist. Three girls, one trained at Sick Kids, and one taught high school, one taught public school. And we had the one that eventually taught high school, we had her for our teacher. And I had a habit of coming late to school in the winter time, and Miss Fraser, and she started after the Lord's Prayer, then she'd read a story, and she knew that I liked reading, and I never was late after that. And the story happened to be that one about Jean Valjean, and the story so that she would read, and encouraged us to read.
That means they're up.
And I think the teachers, they discussed with the parents more as the children would be going through school, what would be the best road to turn when they finished, getting into high school, what to be looking forward to.
When you went to high school, you said you walked to high school, but did you follow what are now the roads, or did you have a path across the country?
No, we cut across country as long as the going was good. And then we'd come out at the west end of town and on up to high school. But one of the big events I'm skipping over was the day that the boys, it was a rainy day, and that's when trouble always seems to start. And Mr. Birch Stoddard's pigs were out in the pinery. There's no fence separating. He was cleaning stables, and they were on the loose. And the boys thought, well, that would be a nice thing. And the girls were in their section and had a little bit of a gramophone and things going, and the boys came along and put the pig in the window, and the pig got a broken leg and had to be butchered, and the boys had to pay for it. And Mr. Stoddard wasn't a mild-mannered man. And when we see him coming, we'd run for cover.
He was worse than Hoss.
Oh, yeah. And his wife was such a lovely person. I don't know how she ever,
Well, that's usually the way, Margaret.
Pardon me?
That's usually the way the wives are nice and tolerant.
She was going to change him. Margaret, tell us about Johnny Neshaw and his family.
Oh, Mr. Neshaw, well, he was at the time that he was retiring, and his thing was he'd drive into town every day the same time and have his glass of ale and then go home. But he had the three sons, getting them settled. There was a big family of them.
And it'd be Roy and Elmer and Lillard.
And Lillard. And Roy, of course, married the Selby girl, and
that's Percy Selby's sister.
Yeah, and they had two of a family, Betty and what was the boy's name? Selby. Yeah, Dr. Selby.
He's a doctor now.
Yeah, and education was strongly stressed in our day. And I guess that, I don't know if that's where they coined that phrase, there is no royal road to learning.
Where did Mr. Neshaw live?
Pardon me?
Down here, the first farm out of off Simcoe Road. The Dorsey owns their, well, there's houses on most of the farm now.
Okay, so that's what we
call where the orchard is.
Okay, that's what we call the Neshaw farm. And
yeah.
That's a lot, 14.
Yeah.
Lot 14, concessions
six
or seven.
Six.
Oh, John and Neshaw family, they were a fine family. Well, those families all were, and then there were the Armstrongs just to...
Just a minute now. Can I tell this story? My dad used to tell the story about when they'd go to church. Johnny and the wife, as Dad called them, they'd be first with the horse and buggy. And then Roy would be next with the horse and buggy, and he'd have two sisters. Elmer would be next, and he'd have two sisters. And Wilbert would be last, and he'd have two sisters. And there'd be the four horses and buggies going down the road to church.
No, everybody went out to church, and especially in the summertime, you always had some person home with you for dinner.
Yeah.
Always.
Now tell us about the Armstrong family. They lived right next.
They were the interesting one. A fireplace in every room in that house.
And the house must be 200 years old.
Handmade bricks. And Mrs., they weren't farmers, really. They were... a genteel, and they were musical, and we'd be sent over to ask for a hand, as they called it, for the thrashing, and you get near the house and you could hear the music, and Mrs. Armstrong would be on the piano, and the men, they went on a violin, there'd be some party coming up, and they were going to it, and but they were such gentle people, and then all these fireplaces, no wonder farmers then had to have a hired girl, all those fireplaces to look after. One of the children asked me one time, well, why didn't they get a stove and save all that labor? Well, they weren't stoves yet. They hadn't come in to be. It was, you looked after your home with fireplace. But it's a beautiful old home, and I hope that it's preserved and kept. And it's built at the angle, Mrs. Armstrong, and these are the things she'd tell us. And she said the farm was built on an angle so that the teams, they teamed their grain to Aurora at that time, and they go about six or eight teams, and it was a floating bridge. And they'd be watching, and when the teams would get on the floating bridge, they get the fireplaces going and get the food going. But to go all that distance with their grain to a market.
At one time, Margaret, wasn't there an Indian trail went along in front of that house?
Yes. Yeah.
The Armstrong house.
Yeah, because it ran along the top of the hill. And the one time it was our first acquaintance with Indians, even if we did come from the North Country. And there's a couple, there were, I took it to be grandparents and a grandchild because they were too old to have this small child. And they came, but apparently before the white man took over, the trail came along the top of the hill and followed along, and then Bradford, I don't know, I guess on account of it being on the river, was established. But Bond Head was older, we were told, than Bradford.
Just to clarify one point, the Armstrong, what you're referring to as the Armstrong house, is that house still standing?
Oh, yeah.
It's just immediately west of Melbourne Crest, the farm. Metcalf is on it now.
Metcalf's the
Metcalf. Oh, it's a beautiful home. and all the big square rooms, and it was all mohair furniture, and Mrs. Armstrong would always take us in and play on the piano for us, and it didn't matter if it was the Nunar or what, and these mohair chairs, and we'd be sliding off and sliding off. And they were so hard to sit on, but the beautiful furniture that they had in that place. They, you know, Scott Settlement was a misdemeanor because it was the Irish that settled our part of the country. It wasn't the Scots. The Scots were from Manitoba that were taking out there as settlers, and failed, and it took them a whole year to travel back and pick up what was left in the Scots settlement.
And you're understanding who came first, the Scots or the Irish?
Pardon?
Who came first, the Scots or the Irish?
Oh, the Irish. The Irish were in there first. And then the Scots came along. And that old Armstrong house, it'd have to be the oldest house in the community.
The Armstrongs were Irish?
Yes.
The Ferrises are Irish?
Yeah.
who were the other Irish families?
Let's see, who was the other Irish family?
Watsons, what were they?
Who?
Watsons?
Yeah, they were. And
the St. Clairs weren't Irish, were they, Margaret?
Pardon me?
The St. Clairs weren't Irish.
Oh, yeah, and Johnny Sinclair, he was the one we liked to meet up with in town. He'd always take you to one side and take you over where the candy was. And Mr. Sinclair would see that
he thought you were... He wasn't going to lead you astray, though, eh? Wouldn't take you into the inn for a friend. Wouldn't take you in for an ale, eh?
Well, I can see why they used it. They didn't abuse it like it is today. I can't. Well, yes, I can remember one, but. there had to be one.
No exceptions to all rules.
The funny things that happened. But when we moved into the community, we were the foreigners because we had no relatives and go to school and every person else had relatives, but we didn't. And
the Browns were next to.
Well, the old Mr. and Mrs. Coombs, there were three generations lived in that little cottage. And you never heard of any uprisings or that in that household. But Mr. Jonathan Nijon, he had his day of work, and he'd go in and drive in every day and have his glass of ale or his bottle of ale, and come home. He'd generally go around and see what the sons were doing.
What happened to the Armstrong family?
Well, they went under, you know, as I said, they weren't geared for business. They were more of...
Or hard work.
No. And, you know, to think of the beautiful old home and a fireplace, two rooms in the basement where an elderly aunt and Mrs. Armstrong would always take us down to see Aunt Mattie. And Aunt Mattie had her two fireplaces, too, in the basement. I don't think she ever... came up, and you didn't have a doctor in that in those days until you were dying, and maybe I can't remember if Dr. Campbell came up to see her or not. There were just the two doctors in town, Dr. Campbell and Dr. Stevenson.
The Armstrongs never, in latter years there was a whole bunch of them, but they never married. And they eventually just kept dying off until there was just Jack and Lou left. And they lost the farm during the Depression. The farm was sold for, was it $3,300? $3,500? Clarence Metcalf bought it. And Lou stayed on. Jack died. And Lou stayed on and worked for Clarence until he died here. When did Lou die? 15 years ago? 20 years ago?
About then.
And that ended the Armstrong.
Margaret, we left you in your nursing career. We left you in Albany, New York.
Yeah.
What happened? How long did you stay in Albany?
We stayed there. My classmate, she had to come home. Her parents, neither one was well in Unionville. And gradually, the ones that had gone out on strike, some of them came back, but I think there were only one or two supervisors. All the others were new comers. But one of the things that we couldn't fathom was they were still having a cot under a patient's bed, a sick patient, and they'd be on 24 hours with that patient. And we'd never heard of such a thing as that. They were so far behind the times to what we were in Toronto, and don't think that they weren't greeting any Canadian with open arms. They were. If you were Canadian, but it was mostly from Toronto, Hamilton, and there were a few from London, not too many, but there were quite a few from Hamilton on account of the superintendent of nurses. She had come from the Hamilton area, but she trained down there. But we certainly got our eyes open to a lot of things. I don't know. I think intensive care has done a lot for sick patients in hospital.
So did you come back to the Toronto area with your friend?
No, I stayed on, and then father became ill, and I came home, he died. He was operated in the Wellesley Hospital. He was operating in the general. It was Graham that was operating in the Wellesley, Dr. Bruce. And it was cancer of the stomach. And after that was all over, I stayed home with mother for a while, and then I thought, go back, and which I did, but mother had reached the point that she needed some person, and but you think nothing changes, but everything changes.
Margaret, this Indian Trail that you said went in front of your place there, is that the one that joined up with Carlton Place?
Pardon me?
This Indian Trail that you said went in front of your place.
Yeah.
Well, it was the one, the extension of the Carlton...
Carrying
Place, sorry.
It came right across and along Armstrong's, and Armstrong's, they called it the land to the north of them.
California Hill?
California.
Where did you get that?
Oh, from the Bothams.
Pardon me?
From the Bothams. We always called it California Hill from the Bothams.
Yeah. Well, that was it. And that was a shortcut. We always took that going to high school, came across country. But we didn't walk across fields, we went along the fences. We wouldn't think of that.
Where did the trail go? Did the trail go down then to the other farm that you?
Yeah, along the hill, and then it used to be Sutherland's. There were different Sutherland families, but this one they lived up on the hill, and the thing went around. I don't know where the Indians got across. Going south, they'd travel. That trail eventually.
Have you been down to the Carrying Place Golf Course? Have you been down to the manor yet?
To where?
Yeah,
Carrying Place. Well, Carrying yeah. Place Golf Course.
Oh, across the road.
No. Down in King Township.
Oh.
Mac Lewis's.
Oh yes, we were there one time. Whose wedding reception was it?
That's called Carrying Place too, and it's on supposedly on that Indian trail.
The one that
connects the Cook Bay or the river with the headwaters of the Humber. Isn't that the connection?
Yeah, that's a connection. Yeah. Well, Margaret, wasn't there supposed on this Sutherland farm that you mentioned? Wasn't there supposed to be an Indian burial ground on the top of the hill there, where the just north of the pump house?
Yeah, there was, and we were more acquainted with Indians. They'd always come around when we were in Huntsville, so it was no surprise, Indian trails down around this part of the country too.
Were there any Indian families who lived that you were aware of in this at this time that you remember in this area? Any Indian families who lived here?
Oh, No. They had long gone, but when we lived in Huntsville, there were always ones traveling around in the summer. They come to the door, some of their handicraft and wanting food. One thing they didn't like was butter. I don't know, they seemed like bread all right, but no butter.
Did your father spend some time up in the Alaska and the Yukon Northwest Territories?
Well, he was out on the lesser slave. His brother, younger, he had a, I don't know what his connection was with the government in Ottawa at that time, but it was there that the thing, his job originated. They were surveying and opening waterways that would open up the country. And my father, the timber went out, he thought, well, this is an opportunity. He was an outdoors person anyway. And he joined them, and Winnipeg was their headquarters. But they traveled out and by boat and walking and surveying and opening up the country. And then in the summertime, this would be their busy season. But even one winter, father stayed out all winter to look after the machinery and whatnot, and I guess it was the loneliest time for both mother and father in their time together, but he was down this morning at the river hammering away to get the water for the out of the hole, and he could hear sleigh bells coming, and he waited, and sure enough, it was the priest and his entourage, and they had these dog teams, and a father wanted to know if they come up and have some hot refreshments or whatever. And no,